Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 509 for comics originally released on May 10th, 2017. Now, starting us off in DC is All-Star Batman number 10. This is one of those bargain-priced $4.99 comics over at DC. This is starting up the first Ally story, which actually I've been kind of excited about. This one sounded like a cool concept. Who was kind of, you know, Batman's first major ally or whatnot? And I gotta say, the $4.99 price point on this series, is it usually $4.99 or is it usually $3.99 and just more expensive this time? I forget.
It's always $4.99.
Well, always $4.99. That's what I was thinking. This title has not worked for me exceedingly well so far. The storyline with Two-Face just didn't really click with me. Scott Snyder's a really good writer and stuff, but I'd been hoping for more than what I'd been getting.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. If it wasn't Scott Snyder attached, and he hadn't built up all this goodwill, I don't know that I'd still be sticking around to this, because it has been okay, but it hasn't been outstanding to this point.
Yeah, if I had to cut a Batman title, it would have been one of the ones under consideration. And that's not a good thing for a title, you know? Fortunately, I didn't have to cut it, so I've stuck with it. But this one, the concept, just at a high level, appealed to me. This has a lead story, this has a backup story, and I really enjoyed the lead story. I thought it was great, it was a really fun use of Alfred. Hush, who we haven't seen for a while, was well used here. And this really felt like a kind of a classic, almost iconic Batman tale. It just felt a little bit more Batman-ish than some of the stories we've gotten in some recent years. And I'm not sure what was it about it that made me feel that way, but it clicked with me in a way this title just hadn't so far. The twist at the end I thought was a lot of fun. This is the sort of thing I've been expecting out of this title, and like I said, just hadn't been getting for the first 9 issues.
Yeah, I thought it was okay. I was less enthused, I think, than you were. It was murky. The art was all right. It's Albuquerque, so it's pretty top-notch as far as pedigree is concerned, but I just felt like Jordi Belair, who does awesome colors on 99% of the time, I just felt this was a dreary installment, and it kind of a lot fit the tone of this book that was a little snoozy. I was just kind of waiting for it to pick up, and maybe there's some baggage I'm bringing from, you know, the previous issues of this that I just feel like it just drags on a little too long, and I bring that preconception into this, but it just felt like it just was taking a while to get where it was going. And although there was a couple of interesting reveals, and I enjoyed the stuff with the painting and the standoff, I enjoyed that, and the reveal at the end was all right. I just feel like there wasn't enough meat on the bone, and nothing wrong with this comic, but it's just not at the high level that I'm hoping for.
Interesting. It clicked with me more than you, but I can see some of what you're talking about with the murkiness. There are a couple of pages where the art gets lost in kind of the darker tones. So I totally get where you're coming from. Also on the pacing, because while it worked for me, I can see where it could have been a little bit faster. And it's not like it's a Bendis decompressed kind of a thing, but to your point of it not being kind of a snappy, quick paced kind of a deal or whatever.
And I think there's something about Snyder's. It's almost like he workshops some ideas. Maybe he has a circle of people that he bounces things off of. And I can just, when we get to the guy with the opened surgery.
Yeah, it was a little gross, but yeah.
And I was like, well, I bet you he's bounced this off a few people. And this has been something that he'd been trying to stick in a book somewhere. You know, what if he did this? And wouldn't that be cool? And he found a way to put this in here. And it just felt contrived to me. And it just kind of took me out of the book. And it's stuff like that you know, I was the biggest Scott Snyder fan. And then just sometimes I just think he's a little too smart for his own good. And he just needs to tell a peppier story that gets me really excited. Some of it can be great and work really well in trade or something. But sometimes when I'm slogging through those issues, it's just I don't get it. It doesn't work for me like it should.
I can see that, too. There was an aspect of this where there were a couple of things, and it goes to your comment about him maybe having almost those set pieces that he wants to use, and, well, here's a place I can fit one in, and that he may or may not be doing that, but I'd be hard-pressed to say that he's definitely not, because, like, the whole bit with the stuff at the stadium in Miami.
Yeah.
First off, why did it have to be Miami? This could have just as easily been Gotham, and it might have made more sense. But I was also completely confused as to why Alfred was driving the Batmobile and stuff. It's like this seemed a little forced, and it was needed to facilitate. Well, they actually wasn't even needed to facilitate some of the action, because I think they could have done it with Batman driving.
They used a real team too. It works for me when both teams are real or both teams are fake. I don't like it when they mix fake team Gotham Knights with real team Miami Marlins. I thought that was strange.
I mean, to me, they should have used like the whatever the Metropolis team is typically called. I'm forgetting off the top of my.
Yeah, maybe some. I'm sure there have been dozens of them over the years that you could have resurrected for this. And I don't know if this is a cinematic cue or something that taking, but.
For DC in particular, that's got a lot of fictional cities, if they'd been going up against the Central City Sliders or something.
Yeah.
That could have been just a cute little, you know.
A nice little Easter egg there. Yeah.
Yeah, an in-joke or whatever. So I can see that. It's just there were aspects of that scene that it I had to go back and remind myself, oh, wait, they're in Miami for some inexplicable reason. Yeah. You know? I liked the story, but I can definitely see where you're coming from on some of the things. It's not a perfect story, and it may just be for me that after the Two-Face one that I felt did drag on rather long and just didn't work for me,
right,
that this was enough of a good start to this story that I was happy with it. But I think we can expect better and should expect a little better, but for me, again, that was a lot of fun. Where this issue really kind of faltered a little for me was the backup story.
Yeah.
Because
if you had any challenges with that first part of the story, then you were not going to enjoy the rest of this.
Well, I couldn't even tell exactly when the backup story was set, and it seemed like it was all set up, and I was trying to figure out, it's like, where is this going, and why are they telling me this? Because for a while with Scott Snyder Batman stuff, the backup feature would just so augment the lead story.
But usually he was writing both halves, wasn't he?
Good point. Who wrote the back?
Albuquerque.
I didn't catch that.
Who we've experienced before, I think, in another Batman book, maybe with it was like a four pager that he did that was kind of out of left field.
Mm-hmm.
He's done a few of these, and they're just kind of they don't really sizzle.
I'll be honest, I didn't even pay attention to the credits on the backup story as I was reading it. By that point, I was already trying to figure out.
What's going on?
Yeah, does this connect? Why does it connect? How does it connect? Should I care? You know, how was he able to pass himself off as this other guy with presumably no makeup and potentially minimal, if any, preparation? The $4.99 price point is a bit steep, and that's just problematic. But I thought this was, for me, it was a good read overall, much more so with the lead story than the backup.
Yeah. Now, on the backup, the final appearance by that character, is that a big deal? Should I know who that is?
They certainly make it out to be a big deal, don't they?
Yeah. And I wouldn't want to ruin it for someone if it is a big deal. It meant nothing to me, but I thought maybe I just missed out on who that person was.
I'm thinking we should know who this is, but even with the name right there, it didn't ring any bells for me.
Okay.
So it was... I always hate it when a story ends on kind of a ta-da moment of like, oh my God, it's a big reveal. And I'm like, yeah, but who the hell is this?
Yeah, they made a big deal about it. And I thought, oh man, I missed out. I don't know who that is. I bet you that really means something to somebody. I bet John will know.
John did not. It was one that in my mind, they oversold the reveal or whatever there at the end, because it didn't really reveal anything to me. Maybe that's a character we've seen and I should have remembered, but it just didn't click with me or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, you're right. A $3.99 comic without this backup story, you know, maybe a little better, maybe a little better score for me. As it is, I wasn't totally blown away by that, by the main story. And then I thought this was a real stinker here at the end. So, it was a little below average, for me. So I gave it a C minus.
Okay. For me, it was a fun read and, you know, maybe I'm being a little more charitable than I should be, but I'm going with a B. I think if you really pressed me on it, you could probably talk me down. But it was fun. And I don't know, maybe it's the premise of the story has me a little bit more reading stuff into it or wishful as to where it's going, then this one may actually merit. Cause again, I see some of your comments about like the set pieces and the murkiness and whatnot. But it was a fun read.
There were some big things, big set pieces in, some of the Year Zero stuff and things that were going on in the last Batman volume that I was kind of on board for. So, mm-hmm. And maybe I've just been around this writer too long and, I'm kind of bored with his, procedure or maybe he's just not connecting with me like he used to. That's possible too.
No, I don't know that it's just you, because the more I'm thinking about some of what you're saying, the more I'm seeing it's like, well, a couple of these scenes are a little more disconnected than they ought to be. And while they had some fun stuff, like you said, with the painting and whatnot, it maybe didn't tie together as cohesively as it could have. I don't think this is his best story. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
It's still, I think, good, but he needs to step up his game.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see what happens. I'm hopeful this winds up being a really fun arc, but you know, I'm not even sure how many parts this one is.
Yeah, I mean, I think this might be the nail in the coffin for me. I think I might just sit it out and let me know if I'm missing out on something. But I don't really feel like I need to finish this one up.
Oh, okay, I can.
I mean, you were right about that Two-Face story just went on and on and on, and I don't know if it ever really paid off that well. So I don't know if I want to do that again.
No, that's understandable. If it's not working for you, move on to something that is. There's plenty of comics to choose from. Yeah, not everything is right for everybody, and there's no shame in that either for you or the creative team.
I can get three alternate comics for the price of this comic and still have money left over for a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
There's that.
There is that. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah.
This is Avengers number 7. This is actually a little bit of an oddity for a cover because it's got dialogue on it. That used to be fairly commonplace, but somewhere around maybe the 90s, it kind of died out. Certainly by the aughts, yeah. It got to where it was just pinup art.
I kind of liked it.
What I like about it is how it sells the concept of the story.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the infamous Iron Man, a.k.a. Doctor Doom, shouting that from this day forth, Avengers, you work for the infamous Iron Man. One, I don't know that he's ever really called himself that, but okay. But it's like, it's an excellent memory jog of, oh yeah, that's what they were going to do in this issue. If I were to make one change to this comic, and it would be a little hard the way they've done this word balloon using the Avengers in the logo, as part of his speech bubble, I would actually have had this issue be an issue of Wasp, because this seemed to be a very Wasp-heavy story. And not in a bad way, but there was something about this that a lot of aspects of the story in the art just didn't pop for me. But I think I also went into it more than a little bit jaded, because you open the front cover, you get the title page of the Avengers, you get the headshots of the various characters, and most of them need this, what I call a parenthetical, although there's technically not parentheses, of, okay, it's Wasp, and they got to tell us which one. It's Thor, they got to tell us which one. It's Captain America, they got to tell us which one. It's Spider-Man, they got to tell us which one. I was actually a little surprised, and maybe it was just a space issue, that they didn't do Iron Man and have to tell us it was Victor Von Doom. I mean, they just say it's Victor Von Doom, but it's... So when you go in with that kind of a parentheticalness to, you know, clarifying who the member of the Avengers are because it's so overcrowded in this universe, that didn't win me over.
And but then, that's just Marvel proper, though. That's what's going on.
It is, but I think there's a way they could have not made that so damn obvious on the front page.
Hmm.
I mean, if they had just done, instead of clips of art there, if they had had just a original piece of art there that had the lineup of the Avengers, you know, and Wasp, Thor, whatever, it's like, oh, we can see it's the female Thor. We can see it's the Sam Wilson Cap. We can see it's the real Spider-Man. You know, it just, to me, it leads towards the feeling of derivativeness, and particularly when, you know, Doom comes in and he's originally mistaken, you know, because he's not seen fully at first as Doctor Strange, you know.
But, you know, on the Earth 2 Weekly Comic Spotlight podcast, that Avengers 7 doesn't have any of those names there, and the co-hosts are complaining that they should have given the reader more information. Which one is it? I mean, I think you could lean either way, depending on which way they chose to go.
Fair enough. Whether that be the Earth 2 or the Earth 3 with the evil counterparts, I don't know. But there is a damned if they do, damned if they don't aspect. Okay. My other complaint about this book is that the art felt washed out. And it may have been that they didn't have the solid black lines around the outside, and they didn't have kind of colors that literally pop or whatever. It just felt kind of muted and
very pastel.
Very pastel and almost watercolory or otherwise literally washed out.
Mike Del Mundo and Marco D'Afonso did the colors.
And they're not bad colors. This was, I think, just a stylistic choice, but one that didn't particularly work well for me. You know, there were aspects of this comic where it had some good lines in terms of the dialogue and a few twists here and there. The interplay between Doom and Wasp was a lot of fun, but the other Avengers almost seemed to get in the way of the story. I mean, they were kind of guest stars in this, and it felt almost like a Wasp issue more than, you know, an Avengers issue, or potentially a Doctor Doom, infamous Iron Man issue. Again, there were some funny lines, but it didn't completely win me over. And when we get to the end with the, oh, look, here's some not so subtle foreshadowing of what happens next, or presumably what the next story will be, I felt like I'd seen that in another book, and I probably have. And Wade's a better writer than that, and I don't think it's Wade's fault. That aspect seemed like an potentially editorial edict playing into either the next storyline or more likely a story in another book or some such. And then we get the next cover blurb that's got Victor in there with the rest of the team. And I'm like, wait a sec, he didn't actually join the Avengers in this issue, or if he did, I must have missed that. It's fun to have him interact with this team, but it didn't feel as iconic Avengery as I would like it to.
Okay, I really miss the days when we used to agree on things.
When was that?
We had a run there where we were kind of in lockstep, and we felt pretty much the exact same way about a lot of books for a lot of episodes.
Fair enough. We've had a few.
It felt like it. And now I am just on the other end of the spectrum on this one, too. I love this comic. I thought Wade's writing was great. It reminded me a lot of his Champions debut issue and how much it drew me in and made me excited for the energy of the book, the fun of the book, the witty banner and exciting adventures that were going on within the pages. I love that stuff. I thought this was definitely Wasp heavy, but I thought that was okay. Maybe that is problematic if in your Avengers book you want equal time for all your characters. I get that. I was okay with it. It just felt like, you know, it was her time to shine a little, and this was the best Wasp I've seen. It was the best version of this Wasp I've seen. It was really, really fun back and forth. The way she was enamored and just awestruck with Victor Von Doom, and then so pleased with herself when she was able to please him. Mm-hmm. That was really infectious and great. Now the plot device that we were moving this team through of what was going on at the camp, and whose camp was it? I've already forgotten.
Susan Storm Camp for Girls Leadership.
Yeah. So, you know, kind of a silly premise, but I went with it. You know, I just kind of rolled with it. And this was if all Avengers books were like this, I'd read more Avengers. And maybe all Avengers, the majority of Avengers books are closer to what you want and like, and maybe that's why I don't like them as much. But this kind of stuff with that was just fun, and you know, they got in, they got out, they fixed the problem, and it propelled you into the next issue, and I really thought it worked on a lot of levels. I loved the art. I loved Phil Noto's art. I loved the pastels. I thought the color palette was wonderful. And I'll be honest, I hadn't been reading this. I think we may have reviewed the first issue, and I was less than overwhelmed with it, and less than really excited by it. So I think I dropped it. And I'm really glad that you suggested this one, because I'm excited. I hope the rest of the run is like this. I'm back on.
We had done U.S. Avengers, not
U.S. Avengers.
This Avengers. Again, there are parts of it. I agree with you. The dialogue was some of, I think, Wade's best in quite some time. I mean, there were a couple of exchanges that were just brilliantly done. As for the art, I enjoy Phil Noto's work. I think his work here is great. I just felt that the coloring kind of got between me and it.
Yeah.
And it didn't showcase his work as well as it could. But again, you do a dark, you know, a night scene in the woods with no light, and, you know, people kind of get lost in the shadows almost. And it's not that it was a bad coloring job, because the way they do the campfire and stuff like that was well done from a technical level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was just, again, more that pastels, more that muted, almost washed out thing versus a little bit more crisper colors, and whatnot. This is something where,
when you think about it a little too much, did this really need the whole Avengers?
Well, and that's part of what I was feeling.
Yeah, he comes and he makes this big deal, like this problem can only be solved by the entire Avengers team, and I can't do it. And then you get there and you find out what the problem is, and you think, yeah, you know, I think anybody could have probably fixed this.
Well, again, it would have worked great as a crossover between his book and the Wasp's book.
Yeah.
You know?
It definitely could have worked that way as well, whether you had the rest of them in the background or not.
When it got to the point where one of the characters literally just drops from the story, and people are like, hey, what happened? Ah, he wasn't needed. Okay.
Yeah, that was kind of odd. Okay, Avengers, and then just teleports everybody except for this one person. Eh, we don't really need him.
There's aspects of a few of these characters, like Thor, that are coming across differently than they do in their native book.
Yep.
And it's not bad. I'm enjoying both versions. But it's just, you know, Wade's going one way and the other writer's going another way. And there's nothing, again, right or wrong about it until you try to jive the two.
Yeah, it depends on but if you really love that version of either one, and then the other one is problematic for you.
Yeah. For me, this had some good aspects, but it was the plot was the weak part. The plot was something for them to be doing so they could have the interaction.
Yeah.
Whereas some of the other plots we've gotten, such as the Kang arc that we just finished here, the plot was a lot stronger. I don't think the interactions were as strong. And I know Wade can do all of that. He's a brilliant writer. And this was not a horrible issue or anything, but it's one where, there were a couple of stylistic choices on the coloring, and there was a placeholder aspect. That's not quite the right word, but a functional aspect of the plot where it did what it needed to, but it didn't do it particularly excitingly. Mm-hmm. That kind of muted my enthusiasm for the issue. And then again, the way it ended just felt a little heavy-handed. But I have seen that in one or two of the other books, so I don't think that's Wade. Not a bad issue, not a high point of the Avengers overall history and such. But, you know, if you want to see some fun dialogue, if you want to see Dr. Doom and this new Wasp interact, which I thought, again, was one of the highlights of the issue, it is worth checking out on those grounds. But overall, I think I'm going to go with a B- on this.
Yeah, I'm not that far off, really. I'm at an A-. I really enjoyed it. I'm glad I got to read it, and I'm excited to be back on this title. I get what you're saying with that, the end of this and the stuff in the Baxter Building. I do think I've seen that somewhere before as well, and I don't know where it was alluded to, but I remember that box. you know, from somebody. And I'm not sure where that's been alluded to. And is that maybe an editorial push that this is part of something that we're going to be driving towards, perhaps?
I'm assuming so, but I honestly don't even know where that storyline picks up.
Yeah.
So as a promotional sort of get people excited about this, yeah, it kind of failed. It completely failed, actually. Not kind of. Yeah.
Yeah, I think if, this felt very familiar. If you enjoyed, if you're enjoying the Champions, I think you'd like this. It had that same fun and adventure that was happening. If it's not really a thinker, it's more just of a fun book. I think if the more you think about it, you might be able to poke some holes in there, and you might not enjoy it as much. I kind of shut down that part of my brain and really, really embraced it and enjoyed this a lot. And that's why I gave it the A-.
That's cool. Again, it's if you're looking for something a little more lighthearted yet not ludicrous, if you right. know what I mean.
Right.
This is it.
This is the main Avengers book. This feels to me like this is Avengers. Because I know sometimes we question, well, which one is it now? Is it U.S. Avengers? Is it going to be this Avengers over here? No,
to me, it's this one. Clearly this one. It's got the closest thing we would have to
yeah.
a Thor, a Captain America, and now an Iron Man and a Wasp yeah. and so forth. It's got as iconic of a lineup as can be had these days.
Yeah, and I think this is it, and I'm glad Wade's on it.
I would like them to go through a period where they have two lineups that if it weren't for the other book, you would think, well, this is clearly the flagship title, you know? And I'm not sure quite what lineups would suffice as that as this is an iconic, real Avengers lineup, but there are enough characters around. I'm sure you could field two simultaneous teams, and that would yeah. be interesting.
Yeah, you definitely have enough options for Hulks and things that you could mix and match.
The trick would be not to have one that has like the quote unquote real version of one and the watered down version of the other or whatever, i.e., not Hulk on one team, totally awesome Hulk on another or some such, but something to where you've got Wasp and Wonder Man and Iron Man or whatever on one team, and you've got Cap and you've got Thor and Black Knight or something on the other. You know what I mean? Something to where you've got some A-lists on both, but if you put the two teams together, you don't feel like you've got the lead and the understudy.
Right.
I
think that's probably what the problem is. I'm kind of glad this one jumps out as the Avengers team.
Yeah, but when it's going up against Uncanny Avengers, half of which are X-Men, and yeah. U.S. Avengers, half of which are X-Men or heretofore, you know, otherwise unseen, it's yeah. not hard for this to be seen as the flagship.
True.
But, you know, they're fun titles all in all. That having been said, shall we move on to our other book?
Okay.
Sense some hesitation. This will be
interesting. Yeah.
This is Medicine Number 1 from Action Labs Entertainment. It's part of their Danger Zone imprint or whatever. And that's Medicine, S-I-N, as in, you know, sin, evil. This is a high concept here is healthcare for supervillains. And what I liked about this was they've got kind of but the opening scene sets the stage for just, you know, how traumatic the injuries can be in a superhero fight. And, you know, if you don't have medical care, you're going to be in hard shape. And, well, if you're a supervillain, you can't just go to the hospital. It doesn't quite work as well. So in the first couple of pages, they really set the stakes for a supervillain, and in a way that really shows one or two of their powers, I thought, in some fun ways. And then we roll forward 27 years.
Yeah.
And then we get to Medics, which is the Mobile Emergency Doctor Intervention Crew, which, good, but rather forced acronym. And we follow these guys for a bit. And I've read a number of other medical dramas and superhero universes and such, Medidocs being one. And I'd have to actually do some thinking to remember what the others were, because they're usually indie type books, and usually short lived. This came at it from a different direction because it's medical aid specifically for the villains versus just a hospital that can service superpowered individuals. And this hospital is a portable one. It's I'm not sure the scale of this thing, but it's kind of sort of like a mini helicarrier that can go to the fight or whatever. So somewhere where you've got almost as much of a paramedics action as long-term care options for the hospital. I thought it was a solid concept and a decent execution of it. Could the art have been a little tighter or whatever? Yeah. But I thought they had a good backstory for why this stuff came to be and enough of kind of the how it came to be interesting, but still leaving some room for further exploration. And I liked how we get a sense of how the doctors were recruited and why they stay. And I also really enjoyed how the story felt like it was fully underway and that this issue wasn't just exposition and setup and, okay, we'll start the real story next issue. Things are happening here. You know, I felt they went from ground zero to a fully realized, you know, not complete world, but enough of what we see here to fit it all together, and it worked well. So I enjoyed this, but I'm getting the sense maybe you didn't.
I had some problems.
Okay.
This thing written by Jeff Dyer and Mark McKeon, hadn't read anything by them before, I don't believe. David Brame on the art. The name sounds familiar, but I can't place what it is that he's done before. The premise, I like the idea, what they were going for. And there were pieces in here that I thought worked, and were kind of interesting. Where I had the problem was it felt like they were in the wrong order. And I don't think they should have opened with the fight. It wasn't clear what was going on. I mean, although we knew from the solicit what was happening, I don't think that worked as the starting point. I would have either started on the ship with the conversations with the medic who is fed up and doesn't know how she got here. And I think they even at one point say, thanks for that exposition, when they're talking to each other. I would have either started there, or maybe with the flashback, where it turns into really light pastel art, and maybe start there to get a sense for who our lead character is and how he got from point A to point B, and kind of do the on-ramp that way. You know, we've seen this crutch so many times where it's, you know, here's action, here's action, here's action. Now let me flash forward or flash back to the real story. And sometimes it works, and sometimes I see why it's there. In this point, I don't think it does. And I think there's problems by setting up the order of this plot this way. And it felt a little jumbled, a little chaotic, and it never really found its footing with me as the reader at all. And I just got a sense as I read it, I'm like, okay, I see what they were trying to do. That's not bad. It's not a bad idea. Okay. That's kind of interesting. But it was never put together in such a way that it was an enjoyable story and something that really made me want to read anymore.
Interesting. I get where you're coming from, and I can kind of see parts of it, but for me, opening on that fight with, Quick Thinker and, whoever the hell this other guy is, Guardsman or whatever, it put cause before effect. And it kind of set up the, somebody should do something about this, and then enough time elapses to do something about it. And I much prefer the, and granted, I'm not a big fan of the let's jump 27 years, but it kind of made sense here. But then we go a ways before we get the flashback that really sets up the, why did this guy do what he, you know, set up this thing. So there are multiple different orders this story could have been told in, and this one worked for me, but I'm not going to say that it was necessarily the best or the worst approach.
So who do you like in this story? Is it Quick Thinker's son, grandson, or the womanizing guy?
To me, Quick Thinker's son is the lead.
Yeah.
And he's also,
he's really the only one that I could hang anything on, I think.
I'm also thinking he's Malady.
Oh, yeah?
The one who, if you step out of line, you're toast. Because
really?
I don't know if anyone has ever seen Malady. And maybe I'm reading more into this than I should be. But this is a guy whose power is, he essentially thinks at super speed.
Yeah.
So he's got to have figured out all of the angles once he went down this path. And this is the way to be in the thick of it, yet also kind of be the boss. And I could be totally wrong. Maybe that's not the direction they're going.
That's much smarter than I think this book is. I know. That would be cool. That would be a cool angle. But I don't know. I don't know. He was playing the good coworker, and I don't.
What better way to interrogate one of your employees than to just have a casual chat with them as a coworker?
You know, I wonder if I would think they played fair if they did that. I don't know. That'd be interesting. That would be interesting.
If they go that way, I would consider it sufficiently foreshadowed. If they don't, then I'm wondering what's up with this guy and where they're going with him. And not necessarily in a bad way. It would just, I would need to reassess. You know, for me, this got away from kind of the cliche, Grey's Anatomy, you know, the TV show just set in like the DC or Marvel Universe type stuff. We get characters that are iconic, that it's pretty clear kind of who they're based on or whatever. But we also realize that this world, there's some major stakes in these superhero battles.
And I mean, for the most part, most of the people are here against their will, and they're patching up supervillains that then go off and do evil, more evil. And they don't want to do that, but yet they don't. I don't know if they're
Hippocratic oath. They don't want to
die. They don't want their Hippocratic oath won't let them, you know, move a quarter of an inch to the left or something and not save somebody. I'm not really sure, but it's really, you know, it's I don't know. The premise doesn't, there's really no redeeming qualities in what they're doing.
Not at all, but they're doing it clearly against their will. There's both Malady, who can kind of push a button. It's like the Suicide Squad. They're not setting out to be heroes. They just don't want their heads blown up. And that was basically the approach taken here.
Yeah.
Which is part of why I'm thinking Ethan is Malady, because he's the one who seems to have set up this whole thing.
But he did spend some time with his backstory.
He's clearly the lead, and if he's not the one pulling all the strings, then how did he get into this? Does he have the same problem? And did this Malady just happen to find the one guy who'd be, yeah, this is a great idea, and not need to be blackmailed into it? Which is possible. I don't know what direction they're going.
Yeah, that seemed to be what they were saying was, yeah, this he's got this legacy. He's got this genetically. So he's going to honor his family this way. And yeah, that's kind of paper thin as well. So it's just another in a piece of this that just didn't come together at the end. But
I don't necessarily expect everything to come together on a first issue. The fact that there's enough to speculate about and that we could really build a case on either side, to me, says they covered a lot of ground in this issue.
Yeah.
So that's what worked well for me. Is this perfect? No. It could have been a little better in a couple of areas. I think the art could have been a little tighter, whatever. But it was a very good showing. I think it was a good execution of an interesting concept. Can they make this work for however long it's going? Sure hope so. I'm certainly curious to see how it goes. It was a fun read. It was an interesting approach to a superhero universe that I don't feel has been done to death. So for me, I'm giving it a B+.
Okay. I'm at a C+, just really not that far away. But where you're continuing with it, I am not. So I'm not sticking with it. And I'd be curious what the listeners think on this one. This would be one where we seem to be going in different directions.
Mm-hmm. And then they also have at the back some files on the different characters and whatnot. I'll be honest, I did not go and read through all of those. Not that there's a whole lot of text. There's about a paragraph each, but I was running a little tight on time.
So. That was not in my preview copy.
Oh, well, you should have bought the thing.
I guess.
Just kidding. I am still struggling to not get too far behind. I tried a slightly different tack this week. Instead of finishing off the week of the 26th, I decided to kind of see if I could push through like all the DC stuff. Which I think I did. I may have a few straggling from the week of the 10th here. I've probably got easily 75 to 100 comics, stacking up to be read. I need to find more reading time is what it comes down to.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And I'm trying to maintain currency on the big two. And I'm at least in this week for DC and, Marvel, but of course tomorrow's a new batch of comics, so I am in the current week. It's just some of the smaller publishers I'm falling behind on, and they are stacking up, and I think I read 3 issues of Box Office Poison in a row, trying to catch up with that. And some of those, they seem to be stacking up on me. And I hope to get caught up at some point. I have vacation coming up in a few weeks, and I'm taking my tablet and my charger, and gonna crank through some of the backlog.
That's a good plan.
Yeah.
Some of this is it just takes a little time to read the stuff, and there comes a point where after I've read half a dozen or a dozen, I just need to take a little bit of a break or whatnot, rest my eyes for a few minutes, and then
there's no way I could do a dozen comics in a row.
For me, if I've got a really, you know, if I've got a day on a weekend that I can just devote to reading, I can get through a ton, but it's in those, you know, 6 to 12 that you kind of, you know, read for a bit, you know, go start the laundry or, you know, whatever sort of, you know, alternations.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's just, there's a lot of reading. There's a lot to absorb, and just having a little time to digest the stuff helps.
Do they kind of blend together when you do them in big chunks like that?
Oh, absolutely. Even when I don't do them in big chunks, they tend to blend together.
That's true.
It's like, well, it had somebody in a Batman sort of suit. It could have been Batman Beyond. It could have been Batman, All-Star Batman. It could have been, you know, Detective. It could have been Batwoman, yeah. Actually, now that I think about it. Was it male or female? It's, you know.
Yeah, the Superman stuff is like that with me. Like, oh, that was really cool what they did in Action. No, wait a minute. That wasn't Action. That was Superman. No, wait. That was Super Sons. No. It was Trinity.
Even if it's Jonathan Kent's Superboy, it could be Superman. It could be Action. More likely to be Superman than that. It could be Super Sons. It could be Trinity. It could be a Teen Titans, potentially. It could be, you know, the fact that these characters can and do show up anywhere makes it a little challenging to keep some of it straight. And, I mean, really, you know, I look at the cover the once, and then I read 22 pages and then move on to the next. It blurs together. But I try to...
It's fun when they do that. Sometimes because obviously they're written close enough together that they can blur the lines, and it's not like, well, this is the interpretation, you know, Iron Man over here, and this is the interpretation of Iron Man over there. So that's obviously, you know, that's obviously this book because they're so different. Over at least in the Superman family, I feel like they are all written with really strong editorial control to where I feel like the same person sometimes is writing all the titles.
They at least seem to be writing about the same characters.
Yeah.
Which is what you're saying and stuff. I would agree with that. But even in cases where they're clearly like parallel universes that I'm flipping between. Because like at one point I read...
Well, that's true. There's Injustice characters
too. Well, I was going to say, well, start with Injustice. Go with Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps. Followed by Star Trek Planet of the Apes. Followed by Star Trek Green Lantern. Or Green Lantern, Planet of the Apes, Green Lantern, Star Trek, whatever they are. So, I mean, I can go through 4 books with 4 different Hal Jordans.
4 different publishers. Almost.
Close enough. Almost. We'll say, yeah. I mean, technically, maybe not. Don't know. I mean, they're all fun, and it's not like they're necessarily radically different Hal Jordans, Injustice aside. But yeah, that's part of why when somebody asks, what have I read, it's a tough question to answer sometimes.
Yeah. What'd you really like? Oh, I like this one. I don't remember which one it was, but it was great.
Yeah. I mean, and I like reading all of this stuff because some of it's going to be, it's okay. Some of it's going to be, it's pretty good. And other parts, it's like, wow, it's amazing. And a few, it's like, yeah, I read that. Well, I flipped through it.
Yeah.
You know, there's peaks and valleys in the publishing output at all times. And by reading as much as I do, I'm more likely to get both the peaks and the valleys. But it's fun to keep up with what's going on. It's just... And part of it with the end of the TV season, you know, that's keeping me a little busy because we got a few more episodes coming out on that. But if the publishers were to pull back a little on how much they're producing, I don't think I would object.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I have made it through about half of the preview spotlight. I haven't finished it yet. And it seemed like there's some new voices on there. And
yeah.
New contributors, which is really cool. And it won't be long, just a week or so. Before the next catalog comes out and it's time to put your dibs in on the next batch of picks. And it was really cool to hear some new contributors. And yeah, like I said, I'm only halfway through because of a long episode, and really good so far, though.
I was amazed how many clips we had. There were a couple of things that a couple of people sent in stuff on. It's like, okay, there's a lot of love there. That's cool.
Oh, yeah. The Legion. There's some real Legion love out there.
Oh, yeah.
DC, DC needs to take note that there is a passionate subset of the comic community that loves Legion of Superheroes and will support a title or two of for Legion of Superheroes. So get on that, because I think there were five people that talked about the Legion book, the crossover with 66.
I thought there were only three clips, but others may have mentioned it elsewhere. I'm trying to remember.
It felt like a lot of clips.
I think there were three clips, and then I may have said something too, because it was one of my picks. So
yeah,
it's at least four. But yeah, it's Legion. Come on.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
But yeah, we're recording this episode right now on the 16th, and I think around the 24th, the online. Well, first, any day now, the online solicits should be hitting, you know, Newsarama, CBR, etc. But then the week after, around the 24th, they should be getting onto the Diamond site. And then I believe Previews is coming out the 31st. So Preview Spotlight deadline is going to be June 10th. That's the morning thereof, that Saturday. Plenty of time to get stuff in. Again, use the online solicits if there's stuff you're interested in. There's a ton of stuff coming out these days. Please send in a clip. It's as easy as pulling up a recording app on your smartphone and then just sending that in. The comic book page teleconference will be the following Saturday, the 17th of June, 7 p.m. Central Time. We had a really good turnout this last time. Great discussion. A lot of fun. Number of people were on. It was fun. Next month, when we hit July, the following Previews in June is going to be coming out the 28th. So normally that would mean, I think, the 8th would be when stuff's due. And I think I can make that work. But I'm not sure when we're going to schedule the teleconference for that month, because normally it would be on the 15th of July. But I'm going to be on the road, and so that just doesn't work for me. So if people have some thoughts or whatever, maybe we do it early around the weekend before July 4th. I don't know. We'll give it some thought. Maybe we just skip it that month and talk about stuff once I get back from San Diego. A lot of options. Just pipe up on the forum and let me know what you all think. Because again, I enjoy doing both the Preview Spotlight and the teleconferences, but right around Comic-Con time, it gets kind of busy. Because I think I'm going to have to figure out my picks for August while I'm at San Diego, just so I can get them into DCBS early enough that they can do the discounts and stuff like that. It's all good.
I did have some folks ask me why I didn't publicize my podcast on your show. And I'm not going to do this a lot, but I will mention it here. I do have a podcast, Comics for Fun and Profit. You can find it on iTunes. I don't tend to do that on this show, but I do leave it in my forum signature with links to how to get there. And occasionally I'll mention it in a Preview Spotlight clip. But I appreciate people asking about it. And if for some reason you want to hear more Drew, you can.
There's plenty of reason to want that.
Yeah, there you go. But I tend not to publicize that on here, except for this time. and thanks for the indulgence.
No, not at all. Definitely. There's one of the things I love about podcasting is there's room for so many different viewpoints, angles, and stuff like that. And you guys tend to come at it over there from a little bit more of kind of the collectability side of things and whatnot. And I think that's a fun angle to have. I know you've had the guys from Cowabunga on a couple of times. And of course they've got the Cowcast, so that's well worth listening to also.
Yeah, they're I really enjoyed their angle as well with the retail angle. It's a lot of fun, and they come at it from a different place as well. So it's cool that we have a real small niche with a lot of different unique takes. It's cool.
It's great because it never feels like, well, it's, oh, they're talking about this one book. It's like, well, I've heard one review about it, I've heard them all. No. I mean, again, like when we reviewed, what was it, Nick Furia a couple of weeks ago, there was another podcast we won't name that even though you gave it an F, they thought was the best book of the week. Different takes are out there.
And based on the forum post about Nick Fury, it also runs the gamut with our listeners. Some hated, some liked, some thought was average. So it runs the gamut there as well. So to each his own.
Absolutely. And it's one of the things I always try to stress is even if I don't like something, you may love it for the reasons I don't like it or vice versa. We're not trying to decree this is the rating of the book. This is what we thought of the stuff. You know, it's, again, different tastes, different criteria for different readers and stuff, and that's part of why it's so awesome that so many comics are being produced, even if there's more than we could possibly consume, because there's literally something out there for everybody. It's just a matter of finding what works for you and sticking with it, and if something doesn't, move on, find what does.
And it looks like there's some exciting stuff. I was really kind of psyched about the video that was posted. It might have been by Eric that had that retailer view on the Scott Snyder and Jim Lee thing. Mm-hmm. Is that the Forge?
That's the Dark Days, the Forge.
Leading into metal. In that whole angle. They were really good cheerleaders. Of course, they probably should with they're on the payroll, but Jim Lee and Scott Snyder talking about that and got me excited for something that I kind of glanced over and didn't realize how big of a deal it was going to be. And so I am kind of looking forward to checking that out and that different kind of event that's going to be happening. And I'm sure there'll be events over at Marvel as well. It wouldn't be a summer without it.
I don't know. They may cut back after the current Secret Empire stuff. It's hard to tell. But either way, I mean, both companies have a lot of big things coming up. I'm sure we're going to get a ton of announcements over the summer with the conventions and stuff. So it's just a matter of you know, paying attention to all that stuff and picking what's right for you.
When is Wolverine coming back?
Excellent question. I don't know. They didn't do it to time it with the Logan movie, which makes sense.
I kind of thought that would, yeah, I thought that's when it would happen, but
I don't know.
Man, if I would have been a betting man, I would have swore it would have happened by now. There's no way they can go this long without Wolverine. And I've really been surprised.
In fairness, they have both X-23 as the all-new Wolverine, and they've got Old Man Logan as Old Man Logan.
True.
So it's not like there's a shortage of Wolverine.
Yeah, there are some adamantium claws and stuff going on around there. That's true. Well, and I was surprised that Fantastic Four has been gone this long.
I'm disappointed it's been gone this long.
I would kind of like them to bring that back, too.
And it's possible with the Generation stuff coming out of Marvel, they may come and bring back some of the classic stuff. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility that we could get Wolverine back, we could get the Fantastic Four back, we could get Odin's son back as Thor, we could get, I'm trying to think who else is gone and needing to come back. You know, who's dead at the moment?
Bruce Banner? Is he alive yet?
I thought they had resurrected him briefly after they killed him, but it's Tuesday. I'm not sure.
Well, yeah, they need to bring, Tony Stark needs to be.
That's one of the other ones, yeah.
Yeah, he needs to come back as well, so.
There's something fundamentally wrong when you can gather almost any group of you know, half a dozen heroes from either Marvel or DC, and at least half of them have come back from the dead.
It does seem like it's a go-to a little too often. They go to the well just a bit too much.
Yeah, it lowers the stakes by them trying to raise the stakes. It's ironic. It's unfortunate.
And things will never be the same.
Worlds will live. Worlds will die. And podcasts will be recorded too. So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think that does it, yeah.
Cool. Join us next week for Flash number 22 from DC, Generation X number 1 from Marvel, and Star Trek The Next Generation Mirror Broken number 1 from IDW.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.